Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. For sake of all beings, wisdom, compassion, and non-clinging awareness. Well, good evening. This is evening one, and I think we have... When do people... who are just staying for the weekend, when do they leave?
Tomorrow afternoon, Sunday.
But when on Sunday? Mm-hmm. What time? I just want to know how many classes to... Because I'd like to have at least four classes for each section. Mm-hmm. And tonight is more introductory, although not light. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, light, but introductory. And... So that's how we'll do it. Somehow four classes. So five total. And then I'll have Jamie work with some of you or all of you on some body awareness and movement to loosen and breathing. I would do it. It'd be fun, but you know I might have to do some other things. Just kidding. You know, it'd be nice to light the candle. Mm-hmm. It'd be lovely. Wisdom. That's good. You know? It's at least symbolic. It's lovely. So one of the things I'd like to say is because I'm speaking English and it is not necessarily your first language, either is it's not Simon's either. It's a different, that's a whole different thing. They speak over in England. But if there are words that you don't understand or you don't understand, please let me know. Because it probably means that other people don't either. So, and this happens a lot. Even in Canada, it happens. It's amazing. Or if I go to New Zealand, it happens. Or if I go to England, it happens. Is people, I'm saying something, and it just doesn't make any sense. So please ask questions. The main focus of this week, but also especially of this weekend, is to give teaching on a very sort of the foundation of all Buddhist meditation throughout history. It doesn't matter what it is. Even if it's these tantric forms of meditation, this is the foundation. So once or twice or three times a year, I like to give this teaching in detail. But I only have a weekend. So you'll have to be patient to go right through the whole thing. The four foundations of mindfulness is the very root foundation for every single form of meditation in the Buddhist tradition. So if you understand the four foundations of mindfulness, and you might have to hear it again and again and practice it again and again and again and again, many years, then every single form of meditation makes sense because it's the root. Even the most complex meditations, that's all comes from that basis. And it is a type of meditation, a type of a system of meditation, or progress of meditation that the Buddha taught many, many, many times. And is extremely clear, extremely lucid, and is one of those things you have to learn. It's marvelous. So if you have any questions, at any time, or appropriate time, then please ask. Right? Please ask. The other thing I want to talk about tonight, start with, is is important to understand not just this is a meditation, but what its purpose is. That's very important. And some of you have been hearing Dharma for many years, but it's always good to hear again and again and again why we're actually meditating. Because sometimes people forget it. Even the old-timers forget why they're meditating. And they lose sight of that. Many people who meditate, especially in the West, They come to meditation because there's something, they feel something wrong. So they want to get fixed. They feel psychologically something, physically something. They come because they're miserable. You know the word miserable? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Miserable, unhappy. Maybe they have depression, anxiety, maybe some physical illnesses, maybe problems in relationships, maybe problems with work, these kinds of things. And they want to be better. So they hear about meditation, and they think, I will do meditation because it will work. Or I hear it works. Or I'll go study yoga and practice yoga because it works. This actually is part of it, but not actually the reason why the teaching of Buddha Dharma, not Buddhism, that's religion, which is fine. But in this case, the Buddha was not teaching a religion, he was teaching something different. Now, some of you have heard this many times, so you can go to sleep. You can go. Nice rest. But it's important to say at the very beginning, because if you don't have this feeling, then you do a technique without understanding why you do it. Okay? So to teach this fully, we have to start at the very, very beginning. And the very beginning is that a human being is suffering. Usually doesn't know it's suffering, mentally suffering. It usually knows it's physically suffering. And it turns out that that is not even true. This is one of the most amazing things, that even a human being has to suffer physically a lot before it knows it suffers. I know many people who don't know they physically hurt until many years later they discover they've been hurting a lot. Many people don't know that they mentally suffer, because it's okay by society to be that way. It's like having infection when you're young. You get a viral infection or a bad case of polio or stroke when you're a young child, and everybody says it's okay. That's just the way we are. You live your life that way. It's culturally acceptable. You live your life that way. And you don't know it. So when we talk about suffering, why do you meditate? Meditation is not just about to be okay or feel better. It's actually to understand what actually is the state of mental turmoil. You know what I mean? Or you don't have any? So I have to. It's speak. Turmoil. You know when you boil water?
Storm.
Storm? A storm, that's a good word, yeah. Storm. When you boil water? Yeah, or the lake is throwing up.
Aufruhr.
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 Aufruhr. Aufruhr. Aufruhr. Yeah, Aufruhr. That's good, that's a good, that's wonderful. Yeah, rolling, roll. Some people only know it when it hurts badly. Yes, it hurts. But the other part of the time, it's okay, because society says it's okay. So the entire basis of all meditation is not to meditate. It's not the purpose. The purpose is to free up the human being, so it doesn't have to actually do that. I know many people in society say to me, oh no, that's normal. That's just normal. That's the way it should be. People, you know, you get depressed and then you get happy and then bad things happen and then you have weird thoughts and life can be difficult. You know, but it's normal. But it turns out it's not. It may be normal, but it doesn't have to be. Now, to hear that, and the same in the Buddha's time, that is like an alien being coming from outer space and saying, hey, you don't have to be this way. Yes, we do. No, you don't. And it turns out you don't, because many, many hundreds of thousands of practitioners of meditation have discovered that that's just not, doesn't have to be. It just doesn't have to be. The mind doesn't have to be that way. This is a long-term problem for humans. It's a long-term problem. So always remember that the purpose of the teaching of meditation, the practice of meditation, is not just to feel better, but it was a teaching of real liberation from states of turmoil, of rolling. And much of the rolling, much of the turmoil, is never seen until you meditate deeply enough to see how much turmoil there is. This is the problem. Make sense? You just don't see it until you go very, very, very slow and deep, and you see it deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. You go, oh my God. Oh my God, I never saw that. It's impossible to see. In this society, which is a wonderful society, in many ways, it is so busy and so distracted that it's even more difficult to see. It's much more difficult to see because the ways in which the consciousness and the body can be kept distracted, we have more ways than mankind has ever had before. It's the easiest thing in the world. As soon as you get bored, lonely, tired, anything, there's always something that you can purchase or have right next to you to make you feel better. Excuse me. It's a martini. Oh, that's a joke. That's a joke. Not only do you have beer, you know, 200 years ago you'd have beer or wine, yes? But now you have a martini, you have a gin martini, a vodka martini, shaken martini, a stirred martini, right? Mint julep, Bloody Mary, did you see? Anything. Drugs, videos, anything. Correct? Just like that. You can get anything. So to actually see how difficult the mind, not the mind, how difficult the states can be, is it doesn't become very, very apparent, very real, until you stop moving, until you stop being busy. And it turns out that the busyness that we have in our society, even the busyness of a cell phone, the busyness of using a cell phone has the same neurological wiring, same pathway, as for a cocaine addiction. You use MRI, you can see the same pathway, that when you take the cell phone away from someone, that under MRI, the same pathway for addiction in withdrawal from a cell phone is the same one for cocaine. This is true. That's true. So if you add up the number of things in our life, you see very quickly how much is there to keep the human mind, right, away from the despair of being with itself. This is too bad, because a human being, for my test for people in meditation, or people who are awake, as I say, okay, if you are truly comfortable in your mind, then you should be able to sit in front of a nothing at all, for 10, 12, 16 hours, enjoying the mind open. No thought, just open, bright mind. Really, for sure. But many people, you know, when I go to talk to scientists, and they ask me, what do we do in meditation? I say, it's very easy. It's very, very easy. Are you comfortable in your own skin? Do you know what I mean by that? Are you truly relaxed and comfortable in your skin, mental, physical skin? So much so that you are not just at peace, but awake, bright. So the word Buddha, many people don't know this, but the word Buddha means awake. It doesn't even mean enlightened. It means awake, fully awake. How awake is the mind? The last thing most people want to do, correct? The last thing most people want to do is look at this mind. So if you think about it, even logically, just think about it logically. It's very simple. Just use a bit of intellectual logic. If everything that you experience all day long is in your mind, yes? Is this correct? Is there any other place? Think about it. Any other place? Is it Reese's mind? No. Are you having Jamie's mind? No. Is it somebody on the moon? No. Someone under the water? No. The fish are not controlling your mind. There's no other place that your experience happens but in your mind, correct? Then where else are you going to look? Does that make sense? There's no other place. Eventually you have to look directly at that which is having the experience. That's the hard part. Because the training in this society is everything but. Do you know what I mean by that expression? That's very common, in English, eh? Everything but. I don't know if that's... You will look everywhere else but the mind. Because the training is when you are unhappy, you buy your way out. New glasses, designer glasses, special designer glasses. You know, and you spend a lot of money. Or jewelry, or meal, or something. You know, a beautiful cup of coffee, something. To bring yourself out of that disquiet. I like that word, for dukkha. You know, for dukkha. The Pali word of dukkha. Disquiet. Uncomfortable in the skin. And if you do that for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, 70 years, the habit of not looking, the habit of not wanting to look at the mind is so overwhelming. The habit, the addiction, very difficult. Okay? So the entire basis of meditation is not to be able to sit perfectly like this. There's no other purpose but to free the mind from that habit, because it's terrible. And you only know how bad it is when it gets really bad, right? Isn't that right? You only know when it gets really, really, really bad. But when it's okay, that's okay. It's okay, I don't need to meditate, I just enjoy my life, I go for coffee to coffee to coffee, tea to tea to tea, you know, movie to movie to movie, country to country to country, it's okay, until something happens. But the way to see it, not this isn't bad, this is just good, the way to see that it's there all the time, is you have to do deep meditation to recognize you want out. You want out for good, not back like this. Okay? So if you, in life, this is for everything, if you say, I just have this vision, you know, you want to say, I'm going to practice walking on water. You meditate. I'm going to practice walking on water, but only a little bit. So you practice and you walk across, and somewhere in the middle you fall in. You see? So if you say to yourself, I only want to feel a bit better, so I meditate to feel a bit better than I am, that's all that ever happens. Do you see what I mean? If you ask for 50%, you get 50%. If you ask for 30%, you get 30%. I will make a garden 30%. You think about it. But this, in our society, it's very common. I'm not, I, I am not good enough. Listen to the feeling. I am not good enough, therefore I will do it a little bit. Enough. It turns out that's not enough. Because you're not satisfied. It's like walking across, you get halfway and then you sink. Or, you know, you have a boat and it has a hole and you put duct tape, you know duct tape? Canadian invention. Duct tape. You put tape on the hole in the bottom. It will be okay. We'll get across the lake. It'll be okay. Halfway? So if the aspiration, you know the word aspiration? No? If the desire is only a little bit and is not clear, the view of why you meditate is not clear, all that happens is you end up meditating. Do you understand? You end up meditating, but you don't necessarily end up awake. This is the difference. Because the entire teaching of meditation, as taught by the Buddha in the tradition of Buddha Dharma, is to become awake and free, not to drink another martini. Not to meditate so you feel better, but to meditate for freedom, to come right out. Come out of the hallucination, come out of the stroke. This is my favorite way of explaining right now, this year anyways. It is like if you had a stroke, it has to be so bad before you get the therapy to regain your speech. You know that? Sometimes you, in a stroke, you can lose your speech. Right? If you lost your speech, how many in the room, if you lost your speech, would you want to regain your speech? How many people in the room? Yeah. Not Teresa. She's okay.
Not quite sure?
She is a silent yogini. She wants to practice silence. So, if you lost your speech, or you can't use your arms, would you want to regain your arms? Yeah? Makes sense? Would you work hard? Mm-hmm. How many hours a day would you work to get your speech back? How many hours? 5, 6? 4, 5? 6, 7? You would, wouldn't you? Does this make sense? What happens? You lose the right to being a full human being, awake, and at peace, and open, and free. And no one ever tells you you have a stroke. Because it's normal, it's okay. It's not okay. How many hours is it going to take every day to regain your speech, your capacity to be awake? See? So the purpose of meditation isn't just to feel good, it's to be awake. To be free of that, to know that suffering so deeply, the mind comes out of it. Does that make sense? That was the purpose of meditation. That was the entire reason for the Buddha doing what he did and taught. If you don't understand that, then you ask for a technique. Oh, Lama, may I please have a technique? Why? You know, I once did that to a woman. She came to the Dharma Center. And I was resident teacher, and she says, I would like a meditation from you. I said, why? She says, you're the resident teacher. Isn't that what you do? I said, no, not necessarily. She was very confused. She wanted a meditation, so she said, give me a meditation. I said, no. Imagine, you go to the teacher, you go for an interview, and I knew she was a long-term student of Namdo Rinpoche, so I said, wait a minute. You've had probably 100 meditations in your life. Why do you want one from me? Now she's getting mad. You can see she's getting, really getting mad. I said, why do you want a meditation? You've had so many. I want a meditation. But I said, you haven't told me why you want a meditation. This went on, back and forth. I really did, back and forth. I said, no. She got madder and madder and madder. She says, you're supposed to give me a meditation. I said, no, I'm not. I don't have to. I want to know why first. It's a bit like quick psychotherapy, you know. She got so mad. So mad. Because I could smell there was something wrong. It didn't smell right. Something not genuine. So eventually I said to her, really, why do you want a meditation? She says, well, this weekend, had a dance, theater company, and she wanted something new for her theater company. So then she told me why, and she says, now will you give me a meditation? I said, no. But no, and then I said, okay, I will. I'll give you a meditation. She said, oh, okay, what is it? The meditation is, why do you want to meditate? That was the meditation. But the point was completely missed, is that if there is not the aspiration, the desire for freedom, then meditation is like a pill, is like a prescription pill. You go to the drugstore and you get a drug and it'll make you feel better. But it never really does. You're never satisfied. Because you never know where you're going. You need a map. So the four foundations of mindfulness is considered a complete map. The full map. And then you have number two tonight is not only do you need to, I believe, and this is very traditional, so I'm very traditional, but not only do you need to ripen, you know by ripen? Mm-hmm. Blossom, ripen, grow, like these. Not only do you need to ripen the aspiration, but that ripening takes a long time. It's not done. Very few people have that aspiration like that. That's very rare. It takes time to ripen the aspiration, to grow it, 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 to sort it out. You have to hear Dharma, you have to practice and be around good beings, maybe good teachers, for years. And it ripens and ripens and ripens and ripens. And normally, almost always, very rare does it not, but normally it is about your suffering. I have a problem. I am in mental pain. I am having a difficulty in life. Me. Yes? So you want that. You want relief from that problem. Was this normal? Yes. But you see, it turns out that that kind of view only takes you so far. And then it wears out. Because you're not separate. Your freedom is not separate from other people's minds. So eventually we need to turn it towards a bigger view, which is to liberate also for all people, because they are part of you. And most people feel, this is amazing, can you believe this? This is funny. It's funny to me. But most people feel that their problems, the problems they have, are theirs. They're not. They're not their problems. Everybody in this room has the same things, pretty much. They're part of society, part of culture, part of genetics, part of human conditioning. So when you're on about yourself, my difficulties, it's endless. It's almost endless. So the maturity is to see that all this difficulty you're in is a human difficulty. It's a human difficulty. It's not your difficulty. Never was your difficulty. It's just being human. It's being human. You have to start to understand it's being human. And loosen up. Have a good joke. It's not so serious. But in the beginning, it hurts. Yes? It hurts. Now, to ask the question, why is there suffering, is a profound question. That is the entire basis of all meditation. Why? Why that suffering? That's what you're really asking. Most people do not want to spend their time asking that question. But it's a beautiful question, if you think about it. Because it's the heart of being human, isn't it? Not only can you be happy and joyful and blissful, but it doesn't last. Isn't that right? It doesn't last. It might take you 50, 60 years to realize it doesn't last. So some people when they're 15 years old, they realize it doesn't last. But some people take 30, 40, 50 years to realize it just doesn't last. And they keep trying. Right? Isn't that what society tells you to do? You just keep buying something new to make you happy. Or do something new. You know, another sport, a bit of yoga, whatever it is. Play a musical instrument, and you'll be happy. But it doesn't last. Even Wangkors, you can go every Wangkor once a day, it doesn't last. You can have a new Wangkor every day, and it simply doesn't last. It rises and falls, it goes like this. Yeah. Even people at retreat centers, they get unhappy. They want to go to another retreat center. As soon as they get to the retreat center, they maybe after 2 days, they think, oh, I could be at another retreat center where I could be happy. Does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could be at a cafe. This is not such a good cafe. Let's go to another cafe. You know? Or whatever it is. You know, a restaurant, cafe, anything. Or partner, you know? Have a partner? I know, so good. Ah. Ah. Today? Bing. Teachers? Ah, not such a good teacher. Yeah. Lama? He's okay. She's okay. Normal. House? It's okay, house. Throw it away. Make it happy. This is a very deep problem, which is not an unhappy problem. It is just a fact of life. Why is it that the human being is not satisfied with its own skin, its own being? Why must it always have every single moment? You see, you think it's every 20 minutes, every day. Uh-uh. When you really meditate, it's like this. Faster than that. It's addiction. Must have, must have, must have, must have. New object, new thing. So, it's amazing. This is the thing about, this is the question the Buddha asked, and why it's so fundamental, is what is it about the human being that is driven to do this? Do you see? So the only way to find out is you're not going to read that. Who has read a neurophysiology textbook and got the answer? Anybody? No. Surgeon, have you found the part of the brain that does this? No. Artist, have you found the answer? No. So how do you find the answer? You're going to have to look at the mind that has the experience. And to do that requires training. And for some funny reason, this is funny to me. It's not funny to some people, but very funny to me. For some funny reason, human beings, but I think mostly Western, although now the whole world is that way, but in the modern age, for some strange reason, there is this idea that to find out why the human being is the way they are, you only need a weekend. Like, I don't get it. It's a funny thing. The most profound question that you could ever ask is, why this dissatisfaction? Is that right? It's profound. Why does a human being feel the way it feels? What is it to have an awake mind? What is suffering? Why this? Why this state? To me, is the most important question. And I know people that come for a weekend, and they go, oh, I should get it in a weekend. I don't get it. Yeah, how long does it take to play a musical instrument well?
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours. Well, not even good, mm-hmm. Just well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Just okay, just okay. Painting? Making bread? How many hours does it take to make fantastic bread? Till you become a master of bread making. Anything. Woodworking, machinery, relationships. It's impossible. That's more than 10,000 hours. You know that. Way more than 10,000 hours. I think it's 100,000 hours. It's the most complicated thing in the known universe. You have, first of all, should I tell you, give you the facts?
Yes.
Okay. Let's have a light on, actually.
Do you want this one as
well? Yeah, let's see what this is like.
No, it's better up there.
Yeah. Better there?
That one?
Yeah.
I think so. Now you're under the light. Let me tell you how, let me tell you the most difficult thing in the universe. You see, the human brain, according to neurophysiologists, the human brain is the most complex thing in the whole universe. Because they're biased.
Biased?
They're biased. They are, it's their favorite thing, you know, the brain's the favorite thing. So they say that's the most complicated thing. Anyways. So if you take the most complicated known structure, only this big, in the entire universe, and you put two of them together, close together, you tell me how that is going to work. It's very complex. So now it is the most complex. Now you need two universes. Have you noticed? You need two universes to hold those two brains. That's a joke, but it's true. So and then you have five or six people. It's fantastic. So, people expect for some reason that the science, because it is called a science, the science and the art of liberation is something you can do in your spare time. Like, it's kind of like a hobby. I'll do it for a week. I'll do it for a weekend. Maybe I'll get my level one, level two, you know. And you can do this. This has never been the case. Because the question of meditation, which means mental culture, kamma bhavana in Pali, is meant liberation. You don't meditate just to feel better. You meditate to liberate your whole being. That's why it was developed. It is, you know, the English word preposterous, preposterous, insane. It is crazy to think. It is something that you do in your spare time. It's something that you do all day long. Because it's the human being. It's your mind. It's nothing different than your mind. So when it comes to very advanced yoga, Dzogchen and Mahamudra, meditation is defined as the mind. That's all. Finished. Easiest definition in the world. People say, what's meditation? At that level of reality, the only meditation is mind. There's nothing else. You can't find anything else. Can you meditate on a flower, a peony? Is it possible? No, you cannot meditate on a peony. This is kind of a trick question. Can you meditate on the lake? No, you cannot meditate on a lake. Can you meditate on Manjusri? No, you cannot meditate. You'll never meditate on Manjusri. And Michael will never be able to meditate on Thousand Arm Shinrizi. Ever. He cannot do it. Do you know why? Because you're not meditating on Thousand Arm Shinrizi, you're meditating on mind. There's nothing else you're meditating on but mind, your mind. It's not possible. Make sense? There's nothing else there. Really, in reality, there's nothing else but your own mind. You come to your own mind. That's not a part-time occupation. It's not part-time next year for a week. It has to be all day. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a good time in your life. It doesn't mean you don't have children. It doesn't mean that you don't have a job. It just means that the solution to being a human being, what is it to be a human being, an awake human being, must be something that you investigate all day long. So the Tibetan yogis, the Tibetan professionals, for hundreds of years, have always said, make your life a retreat. Make your whole life a retreat, not just the week or 2 weeks or the 3 months. If you do that, if you make only the 3 months your retreat, it's not full. Because the whole question is, what is it to be awake all the time? Not only when you go into retreat or when you sit in position A. You know, take position A. Now I will be awake. And then when you're finished, you're unawake. This is impossible. It doesn't make any sense. Never has. Doesn't make any sense at all. If you want to be awake, you have to practice being awake all the time. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. So sometimes I ask people, I say, okay, it's easy. So easy. Do you want to be compassionate? Who in the room wants to be compassionate? Would you like to be compassionate all the time? Yeah. Would you like to be loving all the time? Just loving, friendly. You know, not loving. Friendly. Friendly, enjoying people. Okay. We've agreed to that. Would you like a clear mind? Clear. Clear. Just like, you know what clear? Like, clair. Very clair, right? Clear. Clear mind. Anybody not want a clear mind? Anybody say no? Okay. Full of life. Would anybody like to be full of life all day? Yeah. Life, full of life. Just, I don't mean, you know, ha 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 ha, but just alive. Alive. And you feel good about life. Would you like to have a mind that is settled? Not just not thinking, maybe sometimes, but when you're not thinking, it's settled. Mm-hmm. And when it needs to think, it thinks. Mm-hmm. And thinks clearly. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And how about feeling? You'd like to have good feelings, yes? Mm-hmm. You'd like to feel. When you eat, you eat. You actually taste food. When you walk, you feel the world. Make sense? You feel alive. Would you like to breathe?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Would you like to have the freedom to do things? Anything? How many people would like the freedom to do anything they put their mind to do?
Yeah.
And accomplish. Accomplish. Not be good. Be good. Not maybe the best in the world. Maybe not the very best in the world. You'll never be the best in the world. There's always someone better. Usually. But very good. You want to feel good at what you do. Accomplishment. Why not? That's called being a human, being an awake human being. You want to be awake. That's what meditation is. Not a technique. That's a technique. Those are only techniques to help the mind realize the mind. You understand? Mm-hmm. It's very important to understand. The mind in meditation is going to realize what mind is. That is the entire purpose. Everything else is technique. Eventually, there is no technique. Eventually. There's only mind awakening to mind. That is the meditation. But that takes time and practice to get there. So the four foundations of mindfulness is the path, the natural path, natural, because it's very natural, by which the mind wakes up, awakens. The only thing that the four foundations of mindfulness does not have in it, it doesn't have built in compassion. That has to be taught separately. It's not always natural. Big compassion is not always natural. Small compassion is. But big compassion, for most people, they must be trained. Because it's very difficult. Very, very difficult. Resistance is very big to that. So that's the weekend. Finished.
Is it not if you accomplish the four foundations, the four foundations of mindfulness to compassion happens?
Not necessarily.
No.
No. No. It should, but it doesn't. It doesn't always. The reason being, Teresa, is that for your liberation, your personal emotional liberation, you don't need a lot of compassion. You need some. You need lots of love, but you don't need a lot of compassion. You'll have some, because as soon as you understand the wisdom mind, then there's compassion about the nature of suffering. But to get what they call full liberation, really full liberation, requires a lot of compassion. And this usually you must train a lot. A lot in compassion and emptiness together. And that's the work. Really a lot of work. You'd think it would be, and they say theoretically yes, but in actuality no. Because it is so subtle. Subtle. Very subtle. Any other questions so far? You see, the tendency is, it always comes back to me, not you, me, I'm just kidding. Right? The tendency comes back to me becoming enlightened. Eventually, you realize there is no you becoming enlightened. Actually, enlightenment is compassion. In the end, enlightenment is compassion. In the end. That's where it goes, is compassion. In the end. But that's a big jump. And actually, by tradition, you have to be taught that. Your mind has to be introduced to that. It's very hard to come to without a teacher introducing that full liberation is actually compassion. It's too far gone. Very difficult. Very, very difficult. But you have to have the liberation to experience what is actually compassion. Otherwise, it becomes really loving kindness. It's loving kindness. That's another talk. That's another time. Yes?
Mark, there's a state, if you're involved in something, fishing maybe.
Yes.
You can be completely absorbed. You're not thinking distracted thoughts. You're perfectly happy doing what you're doing. But you're not trying to be conscious. You're not making a point of trying to keep your awareness. It just happens without.
But are you aware? No.
But are you? Yeah.
No.
But does that matter? I mean, you're happy. You're.
Yep. Absolutely.
Achieving things.
That's right. And you, there's nothing wrong with it unless you want to be awake, because you have to go fishing to do that. You see? And I know people who've told me that. So they say to me, I remember one young woman, she said, I'd like to learn to meditate. I said, oh, good. Yeah. I'd like to learn to meditate. She said, yeah, okay. So she said, well, why would people meditate? So I said, well, this is how it feels. Oh, I feel like that. You know, when I feel like that is when I ski off the top of a mountain, a cliff. I get that same feeling. She had broken her neck twice. Broken back twice. And when I do extreme mountain biking, I get that feeling. I said, well, you know, and she said, well, what do you do? Well, we sit. Oh, I can't sit. She would not sit. Didn't want to sit. Nothing slow. Only fast things. But she said, when I fast, and it's dangerous. My mind settles down. I feel calm, clear. Everything is open. I feel this incredible sense of openness. Two broken backs. But not in life. So I feel that way when I go fishing. I feel that way when I go skiing. I feel that way when I'm jumping out of an airplane. I feel that way when I'm dancing. I feel that way when I make love. I feel that way when I paint. I feel that way when I cook. Did you see? But how do you feel that way naturally in all situations as a natural expression of the mind. That's very different. So fishing is like meditation. But it's not asking the big question. Let me ask the bigger question, I think. Because I believe actually a lot of the process of liberation is asking the big question. You have to ask the big question. Move your mind to the big question, not the little questions. If you can feel like that for 10 minutes fishing, fly fishing, you know, you hear the people fly fishing. Oh, that perfect zone. You know the zone? Zone, Z-O-N-E, the zone. And they feel perfect. Everything is perfect in the universe. Well, why wouldn't you want to do that and learn how to do that all day long? I can't figure that out. But do you have to go fishing with your friends, your buddies, and stand in a river once a week for that perfect zone? Did you see? That's not liberation. But it should give you, ask you the question, is why couldn't I train to do that? So the mind would be like that right now. Otherwise, it's basically a drug. It's a type of drug. And this is the dilemma. The Buddha had the same problem. Is he was a meditation master at the age of 33. He was so accomplished in meditation, but he realized he could sit, and you could train this way. Well, many of you could train, not all of you, because it's not natural to all of you, but some of you could train enough time. And you could sit for 1 week like this. Completely like that and feel good. Just feel happy. Just mind, no thoughts, just... You could do that. But he realized he'd have to keep sitting in a good posture and keep meditating for the rest of his life and go in and out, in and out, to be like that. And he realized that's not liberation. That's not happiness. That's not freedom. It's like you have to take a pill. It's not liberation. Or you have to light the candle on the shrine to feel good. Otherwise the shrine doesn't feel good. Or flowers, or the right tea. It has to be broken orange pekoe from Darjeeling to be happy. When I drink second flush broken orange flowery-tipped, broken orange pekoe, I feel perfect. It's the only way I can feel perfect. Or if I stay in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in downtown Zurich and I have my special room with my silver things I'm going to put in my bags when I leave, then I feel perfect. And this is the problem the Buddha faced too. He says, this is not freedom. Because he was a very good meditator. He was a master meditator by the age of 33. He was already teaching his teachers how to even get deeper in meditation. And his teacher said, now you teach. You're the teacher. He says, no, it's not freedom. So he left. And meanwhile, his students were eating one grain of rice a day, trying to become enlightened. And when he gave that up, he says, you're a wimp. You know, Shakyamuni, he's a wimp. Crappy yogi. He's starting to eat again. So, another way of saying this is you never become enlightened by the technique, you only become enlightened by awareness. Awareness liberates, the technique never liberates. The technique never ever brings you to liberation, only awareness brings you to liberation. You have to ask the question.
So even if everything does that for you, you don't have to go fishing, you can be getting up and eating breakfast.
Yep.
You can go to work and look at your computer, and you're still feeling the same way.
It's still not liberation.
It's not there because you're not...
You haven't discovered what the mind is.
So it's just one big, long drug.
One big, long drug. It's not bad. It's not bad. And it's called a godlike state. So many of us in this society, which is very rare on the planet Earth in history, are basically living in a godlike state. Most of us are, if you don't disturb us, don't take our car away, don't take the audio away, Don't take the BMW away. Don't take the Audubon away. You know, when I come to a certain country, I can't help but making jokes. But it's okay. Everything's okay. Then life is okay. You feel pretty good. But as soon as you disturb it, whew, watch out. You can get very, very serious, right? As soon as you disturb that, okay. That's not liberation. You have to find out what is causing that disturbance. What interferes? Where is the cause of suffering? Only by that does liberation happen. That's awareness. You have to ask the big question. Otherwise, yes, you're basically taking a mind drug. Soma, which is the word in Sanskrit, soma. Soma? Soma is the mushroom, magic mushroom. That's the name in Sanskrit for the magic mushroom. Amanita muscaria. You know, they under pine trees. They like to grow under pine trees. They red with little white dots. Mm-hmm. Magic mushroom, mescaline.
Mm-hmm. LSD.
Yeah, you may as well take a drug. But it's good. So the first place you start in meditation is you want to do that, Simon. So that's what you want to train in, because you need a well-trained mind. So you want to do that. The difficulty for teachers is pulling the student away from that eventually, because the addiction is so high. Mm-hmm. Human beings are basically addictive creatures. Have you ever met anybody who doesn't have an addiction? Some kind of addiction. Everybody. Human beings are addictive. They love pleasure. Even if they hurt themselves, even if they beat themselves up, mentally or physically, they love pleasure. So you try to maintain pleasure all day long. Does it make sense? That's what they do, humans. Does this make sense? So when you come to the wisdom side, the insight side, you see that the human consciousness is trying all day long, invisibly, to be happy. But it's not a well-trained mind. Make sense? It's not well-trained. So meditation is the training of the mind to cut through to what is causing the suffering. That's the difference. Does this make sense to everybody? This is the most important thing. I'll give you an example. If you use a lathe, L-A-T-H-E, lathe, for turning metal or wood, like for these. Lathe.
Holz.
Das ist der Fachausdruck.
Drechseln.
Yeah.
Okay, Drechseln. If you use a Drechseln, and there is a problem, and you don't know how it works, you can never solve it. You need to know how it works. You need to know the principles. So if you keep meditating, searching for how to be in a good state, you still may not know the fundamental principle of how the mind is free of suffering. That's a very big difference. Mm-hmm. So let me now explain, which I'll do more tomorrow morning, but to understand in the, those sheets, the photocopies, tomorrow morning.
Okay.
But the four foundations of mindfulness have two streams. Do you know streams?
Mm-hmm.
Streams? Two rivers. One is the river of how to be happy and train the mind to be very concentrated. If you put your mind here, it stays there for 1 or 2 hours. No problem. Wherever the mind is placed, it stays. Training. It's there. A very well-trained mind. That is one river. That's mostly what we call meditation. The other river is called insight, vipassana, or wisdom, is what is freedom? What is freedom? Actually, how do you free the mind? That's different. Eventually they come together. Number 12 on the list. They come together. But before that, they're like two streams. One is you train, and the other is you ask the big questions. And because the mind is so well trained, it can go for the answer. It's like CERN. CERN is a good example. They're trying to ask 4 or 5 very, very deep questions. And they've had to pull a team of thousands of people together to train a machine at such a high level, $5 billion of training, to pull all these minds together, to work harmoniously together, to answer 4 or 5 very, very big questions, which they hope. Some people have been working on this new machine since 1982. They've been working on these questions and this machine to build it, thousands of people, since 1982. That's good training. To do what? To ask 4 or 5 very, very deep questions about the nature of the universe and hoping to get the evidence. That's exactly the same in insight meditation. You train until you can ask the mind, ask very deep question, and you can stay with the question all day long without deviation. You know deviation? Without moving. Eventually the question becomes, what is this experience? What is the nature of experience? All day long. And it's fun. It's not like a, do I have to do this? My teacher makes me do this. That's bad meditation. You know, bad meditation is when my teacher gave me this meditation to do, and I'm doing it because I have to. No, you get to a point where there's nothing more exciting in the world than what is the nature of experience. Because you realize it's the point. It's the entire point. But you have to collect. You have to collect the information. You have to collect. Right? I mean, another way of saying it would be: you have a music. Your body and your mind is a musical instrument. It's not just because I'm surrounded by musicians here, but the body and mind is amazing musical instrument. Not just the voice. It's fantastic. Who's playing it? What level do you play the musical instrument to? You have a musical instrument that is amazing, what it can do. Have you ever wondered about that? Have you ever been amazed at what you can do? Have you ever been shocked at how loving you can be? At how compassionate you can be? How many people in this room have ever been very compassionate? Put your hand up. You know, suddenly, just, wow, that was good. Or intelligent. Who here was once intelligent? Something that was amazingly clear and intelligent come out of your mouth or you think, wow, that's really good. Anybody? Yeah. So you have this instrument, this beautiful instrument that can sing, that can talk, that can be loving, can be compassionate, can be intelligent. But it's not well trained. It's just not well trained. It just isn't. As Namjo Rinpoche once said, it's beautiful. You know, he said, "You're not stupid, you know. You're just not well trained. That's all. You're not stupid. You know, people think they're stupid. They think, oh, I'm not awake because I'm stupid. No, you're not awake because you're stupid. You're not awake because you're not living in a culture that says that awakeness is the number one thing to have as a human being. If you had lived in Tibet or you go to Kathmandu among Tibetans and you talk to them, they all know what the number one thing is in life. It's to be awake. And usually their brother, their uncle, their sister, their nephew, their niece, their mother, somebody, their grandmother, is an awake being in that society. That's fact. I'm not making that up. That's true. You go and you spend time with an ordinary family, and one of them, they're going to have somewhere a saint in their family. They know it can be done. They just know it. That's part of their society. India too. That's the number one thing that you do in life is you become awake, not CEO of a company, not a great football player that makes a lot of money. That's the number one thing that is the highest possible goal in life. The greatest honor you could give to your society and to your family would be to awaken your mind. It's the greatest gift. This society is unusual. It's just a temporary, hopefully temporary thing since the Industrial Revolution. So, just a little... We think it's big. We think this is the way it normally is. It's not. Also, you see, this is now my political commentary. Mark Weber's political commentary. We've never had it so good. This is an amazing society right now. It is normally not a nice thing to be on this planet, you know. Do you know that? It's hell. To be a human being for 2 or 3 billion people on this planet is not a nice experience. You don't want to be here. I'm talking to the wrong people about this. Do you know what I mean? It's a joke. It is really unpleasant experience to be sick so much of your life, to never know when there's going to be war, to watch your children die, to watch your partner probably die of disease before they're 35 or 40. Mothers die in childbirth. Babies die all the time of just starvation, of no water, bad water, arsenic in the water, bad food, poor education, no choices, can't go anywhere. It's hell. I talk to people when I travel sometimes, they'd rather be dead. They can't wait till they die to be reborn, maybe happier than this life. So for a Western person, is like a god. It's like a god, because anytime they get unhappy, they just change the channel. You know, the television channel? 400 channels, 500 channels. Fantastic. Yeah, it's just like that. Change, 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 change. Another book. So if you don't ask the big question, you don't get the big answer. The Buddha was a Buddha. The historic Buddha was a Buddha because he asked the big question. He had the training and he asked the big question. What actually is freedom? It turns out that others weren't asked, they were not asking that question. They were saying, we want to be enlightened, but he's saying, what actually is it? I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied. Nor should you. You see? Are you satisfied, really? No. That's a good thing. Why should you be? So the four foundations of mindfulness is what is the foundations, what are the most basic principles, and how does the consciousness liberate the afflictive states, the difficult states, from this natural mind of freedom? Now, the last thing tonight is when the Buddha taught the four foundations of mindfulness, the tradition was that you have to develop the mind. You see? You have to develop the mind. Later on, in the Mahayana tradition, especially, but it only took 300 or 400 years, 200 years, and actually was even happening in the Buddha's time, because there's references to it. Very hard to find, but there are some references to it that he spoke about. Is, in fact, if you change it and you have the view that mind is already awake, just covered over, then that changes everything. Do you see what I mean? In other words, if you think that the sky, the natural state of the sky is cloudy, there's clouds, but actually the natural state of the mind, you know, because you have had compassion and you have had intelligence and you have all felt, most of you have felt at some point, free, actually, just didn't recognize it. You know, most people, if you really start talking and find out, some points in their life, they've actually felt free. They've actually experienced liberation, but they didn't know it. No one ever told them. They weren't living in a place where they could go. If someone says, oh, by the way, that's freedom. Really? Yeah. Even people who experience the first stage of liberation, enlightenment, don't usually know it. It's too subtle. They don't usually know it. Usually a teacher has to say, oh, by the way, that's... Really? Yeah. Even if their life changes, they still don't know it. It only comes later they actually start to go, oh, this is liberation. But the other way of seeing it, which I hold very much, and it makes perfect sense, is in fact, you could not become enlightened unless the mind was already enlightened. It's not possible. You can't create enlightened mind. You never create enlightened mind. You simply remove the obstacles of enlightenment. This makes it actually clearer for people. And it's true. Actually, that's exactly how it happens. You don't build enlightenment. You strip away. You take away things that don't work. And it gets clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer. Does that make sense? The training is not to become enlightened, the training is to find out what enlightenment is. Because it's already there. You can't make an enlightened being. It's not possible. Enlightenment's already present. The mind is already awake. You can't build an awake mind. You have to just open it up. It's already there. So this is very important. And this view is probably the most important view you can have to feel, is that instead of meditating to get somewhere, you meditate to uncover what is already there. If you do that, you save yourself 10 or 20 years. I'm not kidding. If you really get to feel that and you hear that again here, by hearing I don't mean this, I mean this. If you hear that again and again and again, then you save 10 or 20, 30 years. Because you're not fighting to pretend to build something. You're actually looking for what is already there naturally, already present in the being. And that's also why we train in Tantra, because that reveals it faster. It's a very fast method, but it's also a very difficult method. When I experience you, I tell you honestly, I mean this just from my own genuine experience, when I experience everybody, I experience Buddhas. So my heart feels not sad, but goes out, because I see people, they go, oh, I'm angry, or I'm sad, and I go, but your mind isn't like that. That's not you. You think that's you, but I get to experience something else. That's not what I see. Those are like clouds, you know? Like, oh, the sky has a black cloud. That's me. I go, what? That's not you. I experience radiance and intelligence and clarity and Buddha wisdom. Where? Well, that's what I see. That's what I experience. When I look at the sky, I see radiance. The first thing is not the black cloud. Oh my God, look at the black cloud. The first thing I go is, look at the luminosity, look at the clarity of the sky. It's amazing. The cloud and the sky are not separate. This is a very important view to change, is that meditation is finding and getting the evidence, just like at CERN. It's very similar. You do enough collisions. Every time you meditate, you know, enough moments of seeing it, eventually you gain the confidence. It goes, of course. That's what's going to happen. They've been looking, they've been finding the Higgs boson for years. You'll see. And they were looking right at it. This often happens in particle physics, is they're looking right at it, and some usually a graduate student, 21 years old, goes, well, they just walk in. What's that? And you could express that by the following equation. And they go, oh, wow, really? That's usually how it happens. Just some kid comes in and goes, yeah, it's right there. Oh, didn't see it. So it's happening all the time. What you do is you meditate to set up experiments where you start to get more evidence. The mind has a quality, has a certain freedom, and you catch the freedom more and more and more and more and more until one day it is overwhelming the evidence. It's shockingly overwhelming. It just, there's no other possibility. It's confidence. Confidence. Confidence through experiment. Confidence through evidence. Evidence. Wisdom is through evidence, not through fantasy. The only way you can have wisdom is because you actually experience definitive freedom. Yeah. I think that's plenty for introduction tonight. It's fine. So stop killing yourselves and beating yourselves up. You're already enlightened. You just don't know it. That's all. That's true. That's true. Every being that's experienced enlightenment says the same thing. They all discover the same thing. They laugh their heads off. They go, what an idiot. I never saw it. How come my teacher never just told me? That's what happens. How come they just didn't tell me? And I could have seen, I could have just looked at my mind. Oh, there's the clear mind of awareness. How come? Because they did. So you keep at it. But you have to have the feeling that this is actually truth. You have to have the feeling this is worthy. You know the word worthy in English? It's worthy. It's worthy of doing because it's being a human being. Will the real human being come out and play? You know what I mean by that? Ever said that to a friend? Would the real so-and-so come out and play and be happy? You know, just come out and play? Would you participate in life? That's what it's like. Come out and play. Come out and be a human. So this weekend, just relax and be happy. Don't beat yourself up. Just enjoy. Relax. I would ask you not to talk, because talking interferes with being, just being with material.
I'll see how awake you are. I will definitely give four more classes. Four more classes. And we will go through each of the four sections, and I will do a detailed explanation of the four classes. And also we have handouts. This is new. There's some copies for people. This is the step-by-step progress of insight, of wisdom in here. And that will help people. And there's a bit of a donation for that. We only have two copies left, but I'm going to give this to Ava and Michael as a gift, and this is a whole month of teaching on this one weekend. So there's 25 talks on breath meditation, and you can either make copies of this if people want, or that is there's some friends or students or make this in Canada, and you can order it. It's just by donation. It does no, there's no price, whatever you feel like. But and then there's some other books. Also, there's a very, if you want, there's a very short CD. I think it's CD, or I think it's a CD, just on insight meditation. So it's very important that you understand. Some people have pure faith. You know pure faith?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pure faith, confidence. They have pure confidence. Faith?
Faith.
No, faith. Yeah. Very rare for a Westerner to have pure faith. Yeah. Do you know? Pure faith. They just know, they know, they trust. They trust. It's very rare.
Yeah?
Trust. Perfect trust in enlightenment. Very rare that you see a Westerner have perfect trust in enlightenment and they just do it. They just do it. No. But for many Westerners, they are raised in tradition of knowing why they do things. Trust through knowing. So it's very good for Westerners to know why, and the tradition of enlightenment is very strong on knowing why. It's a very rare tradition that way. It's very much equally, not just practice, but knowledge. Practice and knowledge like this. Practice and knowledge. This is very much our tradition, practice and knowledge. So, come back tomorrow morning.
Oh.
What time is that tomorrow?
9, wasn't it?
Just whatever is easy for everybody for breakfast and time after. 9 o'clock is fine. 9 o'clock is fine. Come back at 9 o'clock, and I'm going to ask Jamie. I wonder if this is possible. We'll see with the schedule. Do you want to do before a class?
Sure.
Could you go from 8 to 9? Maybe that's too early. I don't know, for the first morning.
Depends on what time they eat.
What time are you going to eat?
We didn't decide yet. We can say 7. Or
yeah. Maybe people are too tired. I don't know. Maybe not the first morning. But I want to show you ways of developing awareness and how important... Well, I'll teach some principles. This is a... We have to teach a lot this weekend. How about a half an hour?
Sure.
Half an hour?
I'm happy to do an hour. I just wonder if it'd be too much after breakfast.
Actually, we could go from 8:30 till 9:30.
Okay.
And then I can have a break in the morning. So yeah, so why don't we do that? We can go from 8:30, because an hour would be good with people.
Sure.
8:30, how's that? 8:30 till 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
And then have a break of... 15 minutes. And then I can start 9:45 and finish at 12. And that way you get to be very relaxed before me. He will work on you before I come along. How's that sound? Is that too early? 8:30? Start 8:30? Does that work?
Yeah.
So you have them for 1 hour and you can soften them up. Massage them. It's good. Let's share the merit by this powerful activity that we do together. May it lead to the cessation of suffering for all beings. Idante punikamang asawakyuhang ho tu. Idante punikamang asawakyuhang ho tu. Idante punikamang asawakyuhang ho tu. May all beings be well and happy, and may all beings be established in a continuum of freedom, the perfect union of wisdom and compassion. Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam. Good. Good. You're welcome. Thank you. If you didn't have a mind, it would be hard to teach.